Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions, text them in right now to 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can before we let John go. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So what's going on in San Francisco? Raheem Mostert wants out.
Well, I'm telling you, it's like a Super Bowl hangover. I mean, this is now the classic Super Bowl hangover where things just keep going wrong. And think about all the things that have happened to this team. You know, you got Mostert, who's Matt Breida, they traded to the Miami Dolphins. I mean, he was on a restricted tender, so they saved, you know, like $3 million on that. Next thing you know, you've got, the situation now with Mostert, who's, feels underpaid because I think he thinks he's going to be, the top running back. And, there's nothing going on with negotiations because they've got other things to do, like George Kittle. Then you have all the injury things that have happened. I mean, D. Ford, has an extensive knee surgery. Kwame Alexander, the linebacker, I think he had a torn pec surgery. Then you've got the injuries from the disaster in Nashville where, you've got Debo Samuel with the Jones fracture. Another cornerback suffered a Jones fracture. They had to cut him. You've got Richie James with a broken wrist. He's going to be out for a couple months. And now you have Mostert trying to get a trade. It's like Super Bowl hangover all over again.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, John, that's what happens, right? Like when a team goes to the Super Bowl, everybody thinks that they were a bigger part of it. That's at least one of the trappings that I've heard, that, once you go to a Super Bowl, all the players think, hey, this was about me, and, they want more, and it's really interesting to see that. What about Sherman's comments? I don't know if you've heard. He was kind of, he was praising Kyle Shanahan, which, mm-hmm. as Jim said, I mean, you're supposed to do that, but he's kind of taking some shots at Pete, just a little bit of veiled shots at Pete Carroll.
Like, what kind of shots did he take?
Well, he was just saying that there's a whole quote here, but he was basically saying, yeah, he's one of those kinds of guys that he said Kyle Shanahan's more of a straight shooter than Pete. And Pete has a way of making sure everybody feels good, making sure he pushes buttons, and certain players are not pushing buttons on other players. And he just said Kyle's different. He's more one size fits all. I don't know. Maybe I just saw it as him kind of slighting Pete a little bit.
Well, you can see. I mean, it was not a good parting. Particularly, I mean, you're Richard Sherman. You feel bad about the standpoint. It's like, oh, wait a second. I play Hall of Fame football for all these years. I tear an Achilles and you cut me. It's like, oh, that's good. And then, you have basically 2 years where he drove all the coaches and everybody crazy by, making these stands saying, hey, we need to do this, we need to do this. And so, one thing we know about Richard, he's always going to have opinions. I respect him a lot because he's one of the best guys I've ever dealt with as a player. But, he will cause some frictions, and naturally he's got to feel bitter, just like Earl Thomas, I'm sure, feels bitter about a lot of things. But the one thing that you have to say about Pete Carroll, sure, he's promotional, he's supportive, he's really good, and I think that his communication skills with players sometimes might be a little too rah-rah, but it works.
John, Sherman's 32 now. How many more years do you think he can play left corner?
I think it's year to year now. I mean, because you saw that particularly in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, he struggled a little bit with his speed, and you don't know how this offseason, with no offseason workouts, affected him. I mean, fortunately, he stays here in the Seattle area. He actually works, I think, with a few Seahawks to try to stay in shape and do all that stuff. But, the one thing that can happen is that, if they start to think at 31, 32 years old that he's, got to make the move to a different position, I think that he can be successful as a safety because he's so smart. He's such a good tackler that I think he can work as a free safety. So even if the cornerback days are starting to end, and of course this is the last year of his contract with the 49ers, I still think there's a decent chance that he can still continue playing football.
Hey, we were talking about a team that's looking at about 14,000 fans for a game. How do you, and I know we talked about this, and I think Dave, or maybe it was Jim, said maybe it'll be a lottery. Just trying to determine how they figure out which 14,000 of their 65,000 fans, let's say, are allowed to come to a home game. Have you gotten any more information on
how they might do that? And there's 71,000, so it's even tougher.
Yeah, whatever. It'll be different in every stadium, obviously, but just how they're going to determine which fans can go and the rest of them.
No clue on that one. I guess maybe there's a seniority list and maybe a list of who's the highest paying customers and all that stuff. But that's still to be sorted out or at least explained. But the big thing, and this was one of the bolder moves by any team, you know, they basically told every season ticket holder, your season tickets aren't valid this year. You know, you can push the money into next year for the season tickets. You're not going to lose anything as far as where you are, as far as, you know, the season tickets and all that stuff. So you'll still have your seats next year. But they basically said, you know, we'll award them either on a game by game basis or some way of doing it, but no explanation as far as that goes. But the way they phrased it today, it sounded pessimistic whether they're going to get the permission of the people in Baltimore and in that county to be able to play with fans in the stands.
Hey, John, let me ask you, we were just talking about as far as coaches go, who are some of your favorite coaches from the past that you really liked? I mean, I'm sure being there in Pittsburgh, Chuck Knoll, I have always really liked Mike Tomlin. I feel like, and I do it very scientifically, John. I look at him, I listen to him, and I go, I can play for that guy. But, you know, you've been covering the league for a long time, and you know, just this, just the way that Sherman was describing Kyle Shanahan almost sounded like Belichick. You know, it's like, hey, this is the way we do it. It's very straightforward. But who have been some of the coaches that you've admired covering the league for all these years?
There's so many. And of course, you know, we start with Chuck Knoll, who, you know, I covered through most of his career. Certainly loved Bill Cowher. I mean, he was fun. Jimmy Johnson was a lot of fun. I liked him. You know, I go over and look at Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, John Gruden. You know, they've been so much fun to cover. One of my favorites, even though he was kind of wacky, was Jerry Glanville, because I'm the first person that he ended up saying that he was leaving tickets to Elvis, because he would call me up on a Tuesday and say, hey, partner, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go leave some tickets for Elvis this week, and started that. And, you know, he'll tell me all the crazy fights that they would have in practice. You know, Mike Martz was always a guy that I liked. I mean, there's so many of these guys.
Dungy?
Tony Dungy, absolutely. In fact, I was with Tony when he was a player, safety for the Steelers, and then he came back at the age of, I think, what, 25 or 26, and I saw him in training camp and says, Tony, what are you doing here? I'm interviewing for a coaching job. And through the years, you know, I spent so much time talking to him, you know, and trying to, you know, get hope that he does get a head coaching job, which he did. And he's like, that's the thing. It's like, there's more people that, you know, I love talking to and being around coaches. Ron Rivera is a guy that I've liked a lot. So there's a lot. I could spend a half hour talking about that, but I won't.
So, John, this 35% in escrow, players' salaries, that didn't go over very well with the players. I have a suggestion. What if the owners came back and said, you know, we changed our mind. We're going to go with 45%. How do you guys feel about that? I'm kidding, John, but where are they going to go with this situation?
Rejected. And I think people are kind of overreacted because, well, this is not like baseball with the players and the owners and, you know, Fred Manfred. I mean, these, you know, they've got a 10-year agreement, right? And they're all locked in for 10 years. And so it's like they're going back and forth on things. It's like, okay, so, you know, the players did not want to do the coming in a week before the start of training camp, you know, 7 days before. And so now the owners come back and they say, okay, well, we want two preseason games because we need to see you on the field. The players come back and say, no, we're not going to do preseason games. Then, of course, then they come back and they say, okay, so we want the 35% in escrow because, you know, we're going to be losing money and this could help manage the cap a little bit better. And the players come back and say, no, wait a second, we'll just borrow from next year's cap. And so let's not do that. So it's just a back and forth that'll be resolved here in a couple days, but it's just negotiations more than anything else.
Hey, John, what do you make of Josh Gordon putting his Super Bowl ring up for auction? I read the story, and they're implying maybe, you know, he's missed out on millions, and maybe he needs money, and, you know, I'm not sure how much he's made in his career, but have you heard much about his financial situation?
You'd have to think it gives an indication that money's got to be a little bit tight, and to put up, you know, because again, to get $100,000. And I think what it also tells you is that, you know, he might be willing to go for the minimum plus a signing bonus of $137.5, which would be great for Seattle to be able to get him at that number, which is what they basically got Philip Dorsett for. And so, yeah, it just shows me. And, you know, again, it's funny because, again, with the injuries they have down with the 49ers, maybe there was some thought that, okay, he might go to the 49ers, but that tax on, you know, on wages, what is it, like 13.4%? You know, that may not be one that he would want to go to.
State income tax.
State income
tax. I thought
tax.
You were talking about the 49ers taxing.
No. State income tax. But yeah. So I would have to think that what this does, it shows an even better chance once he's activated and allowed to play that he could come in there and go ahead. Now, again, it's still debatable if he has two more games to serve, because if it was a sixth game on one of these, a PED or whatever, then he can go. But, you know, it just tells me money's got to be tight for Josh.
Hey, John, is the fact, and I know you talked about it on your show today, Quentin Dunbar hired a second attorney. Do you think that makes it worse? Is it better? Is it he less likely to play? What
hard
do you think
tell,
about that
because,
move?
You know, what I, and again, you know, we've done this so many times. Could we guess how Roger Goodell is going to handle anything? Because we can guess and just be wrong all the time. And so, you know, what they have to look of is like, okay, yes, it's an assault charge. That would put him in a position to maybe, you know, be suspended for player conduct. But also, you know, there's evidence apparently that the victims say they weren't victims. And so they may take the tack. It's like, okay, let's just settle that in court and see how it goes, as opposed to be proactive and then make some kind of a decision. But I think what this does show that he's hiring a second attorney is that the prosecution is going to go ahead and try to hear this case. The problem is, I'm sure, like it is on everything else with, you know, a lot of these hearings being virtual and a lot of hearings being, you know, delayed, is that this thing is going to go into the season, if not longer. I mean, what are we, like 2 years now into the Michael Kendrick sentencing and nothing's been done there? And of course, he's not on the team and it's coming back of an ACL, but it just tells me that he's, you know, both these guys are in for the long haul, but still there's a chance that they'll be allowed to play. It's just a matter of what's Roger Goodell going to do on this.
John, I have a multiple choice question for you on how many.
Okay, wait
on this, John. Okay, how many NFL players will opt out from playing this season? Will it be A, 0 to 9, B, 10 to 20, or C, more than 20?
I think it's going to be more than 20 because, again, it's how you how you evaluate it, because, you know, it still could be one of those things where do you take the players who are still on the street that haven't signed and they're included in this? You know, because I counted up about 29 Pro Bowl players that are still on the street. You know, some of them are old, and I'm not counting the guys who've already retired, but you got 29 Pro Bowlers. And so, you know, what we can see is, okay, now, well, Devontae Freeman, if he doesn't get $8 million, will he opt out? Now, again, he doesn't have a contract. You know, is Chris Jones, if he doesn't get his $20.1 million, is he going to opt out? But I think that you are going to see, you know, some names in there that'll do that, because they're going to be, you know, some will have pre-existing conditions. Some, particularly with the, you know, what, 629 guys on one-year contracts, you know, they may take the position. He's like, you know what? I'm not going to risk it. I'm just not going to do it. But I think I take the over as opposed to the under.
Hey, John, what do you know about this story I'm reading that the NFL Players Association president, J.C. Treader?
Treader, yeah.
Yeah, he escalated a disagreement with the NFL over the terms of training camp and the preseason amid the coronavirus pandemic, right? Apparently he wrote a blog and he said, quote, "The league is unwilling to prioritize player safety and believes that the virus will bend to football." So do you see a...
But this was one that he did a couple of days ago, right?
This is yesterday.
Yesterday. Well, last night they got an agreement on the training camp protocols. So.
Okay, so it worked.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, and I think JC's been doing a pretty good job, because I think he's been pretty level-headed about these things. And if there's some things that he didn't like, he's willing to speak up about it. And again, why not? Because, you know, it's, you know, open negotiations on trying to get this stuff done. But last night they did agree to the protocols. And so, you know, as much as there were some things that he didn't like, there was enough things that changed that allowed both sides to be able to get that done. That's why, in the end, I think they'll get everything done, you know, maybe as late as Monday, as far as, you know, training camp. Because I think that, you know, he's going to, I think he's going to get his wish on the preseason games. Because really, when you think about the big picture, are there going to be fans allowed in the preseason games? And if there's no fans allowed in the preseason games, how are you going to make up the $13 to $15 million of revenue that's going to be there with fans in the stands? Okay, that's just not going to happen. Sure, you're going to lose some TV money, but you know, you're looking at, you know, a little over $800 million of lost revenue, which of course, you know, the players that takes their cap down next year, but they can still borrow it from the future caps and get that to move up. And then if college football doesn't come around this season, which is now starting to become more likely, you know, they might be able to squeeze out some more dollars for having games on Saturday, flexing them in that way.
So when you make reference to the preseason games, because I'm reading along in the story, it says he wrote that the NFL and the NFLPA Joint Coronavirus Task Force agreed to a 48-day training camp without preseason games.
I could be wrong about this, but I think it was probably a little vague because it says fewer preseason games, shortening the preseason. I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding of you know, what it was. And so they did listen and go 4-2. But again, I think what it still comes down to is that this is still part of the negotiations between the two sides, and you make trade-offs. And you know, to me, JC makes a great point, even though his initials are the same as mine, which I have to respect. But JC makes the point. It's like, okay, should we really put efforts into you know, games that don't count and don't mean anything? Why don't we just get ready for the regular season? And the thing that I really respected of what he did in the letter that he put out last night is that, you know, he played to my strengths and said, okay, look at the ACL injuries and the Achilles tendon injury and the hamstring injuries, which, of course, you go back to 2011. As he said, the Achilles injuries doubled to a point where it started out in training camp. In the first 12 days, there were 10 Achilles tears that ended their season. There was 51 ACL tears, and he quotes that hamstring injuries went 44%. So when you look at those numbers, it's like, is it worth the risk, along with the fact you can get the virus?
John, I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but what you're hearing is Jim finally getting his sons to do the lawn, because I believe
That's on me, because I have my landscape company place. Right now trying to, you know, cut some flowers down, and you know, they blow things around. That was on my end.
Well, Jim's teenagers have been asked to mow the lawn like 3 times, and so there's lots of pressure coming from the texters and people that are listening. Jim needs to get his boys mowing the lawn. Justin Britt, I want to ask about. Somebody, I think it was 206, asked about Justin Britt. You know, John, it's funny. He's a really good player. Mm-hmm. I really respect him. It's too bad that his knee got blown out, but he's only in his 7th year. I mean, it's not like this guy. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl alternate. Do we have any news on him? And do you think he's going to be able to get, you know, a pretty decent contract?
No, he won't be able to get a decent contract. He's coming off an ACL when nobody's wanting to pay. And, you know, even in a worse situation than it was for, you know, what you can see for Jadeveon Clowney, it's like he's coming off an ACL and nobody's going to even do anything, even talking to him, until they can get him in for a workout. And they haven't cleared out anything as far as physicals or anything like that. So he, like all the other ACL people that are on the street, they're not getting anything right now.
John, I like this question from the 425. Who has the better career when all is said and done, Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson?
They're both tied. I mean, because...
No, John, you can't say tied.
I just did.
I know. Can you pick one, though?
What was that?
Can you pick one?
Well, I mean, right now the edge goes to Russell Wilson, because he's been to 2 Super Bowls and won one and should have won 2. And if he can get to the 3rd Super Bowl, then he's going to be, you know, without doubt, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. In the case of Patrick, I mean, he's trending up, and right now probably trends up to be above Russell, but he hasn't been in the league long enough to be able to equal the accomplishment of Russell. And again, you know, everybody brings up the MVP thing, that Russell's not had a vote. Well, there's been 8 votes right now with Russell, or 7, yeah, 8 votes with Russell. Well, there's only 8 votes, period, because it's a vote one person or not. And so, you know, that's why he hasn't had any votes, because there's only 8 people that got votes since he's come into the league in 2012.
John, the 425 wants to know, why are the Patriots so tight against the cap? They're not paying a quarterback or receiver, so where is their money going?
Hard to, I mean, you know, they had to take, you know, a little bit of a cap hit when they let Brady go, and they, you know, their big thing right now is a $14.7 million salary on their franchise guard, Joe Thuna. And if they had, you know, if Joe Thuna was just, you know, given, you know, not the franchise tag or let go, then they'd have plenty of room. But right now, the Thuna thing, which was a surprise, because really, when you look at their cap and you look at their team, there's not a lot of high-paid players. You know, I know that it seems as though the Seahawks and again, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick like to build things the same way. They like to build it from the back to the front. And so, for example, you look at Belichick, and you know he's got big money tied up in Stephon Gilmore, and they've got three of the best coverage cornerbacks from man in the league. You know, they've got mobility and flexibility at safety in the linebacking core, and you notice that Bill doesn't like to pay defensive ends. Like, for example, he let Trey Flowers go. He let Chandler Jones go. And, you know, and it seems like the Seahawks and Pete, there's a certain limit of what they want to pay a defensive end, and they don't want to go overboard on it. So it's kind of interesting to see how the both work. But, you know, it's some of the departures that they've had, some of the releases that they've had, and the fact that they've got a $14.7 million guard, who most people think isn't a $14 million guard.
All right, John, 253 wants to know, if a player opts out from playing this year, does it free up cap space? And then I would ask another question, too. Does do they get accredited season still?
That is being negotiated as we speak. So the answer will come out here in the next couple of days. My guess is that they would put them on the, you know, retired list, and he would come off the cap. We'll see if there would have to be, you know, if it's a multi-year deal, there might be a, well, the cap hit would be more into next year than anything else. So, yeah, there would be cap relief. And remember this. I mean, I know that I bring up the scary numbers that, you know, maybe there's going to be, if there's a 5% positive rate for the test, there could be 150 or so players that will test positive. You watch, there's going to be a lot of players that are going to be failing physicals and not be on the team. And many of those may be, you know, healthy. I mean, or at least it's teams backing out of the deal, because we've seen it five times in unrestricted free agency. So we're going to see a lot of movement like that. One of the things that the players are negotiating on today is that they're trying to see if they can get a smaller roster size going into camp. They're more of 75 to 80, and that may be something that'll be in the equation to negotiate.
Cam Newton officially signed with the Patriots today, John. Can you speculate on what his completion percentage will be? How many passing yards? How many rushing yards? Touchdowns and interceptions?
Yeah, I mean, I would say he stays around 58 to 60%. He's a 58%, and you are what you are. I would anticipate that, you know, he'll rush for about 800 yards if he gets to 16 starts. I would think that you know, his touchdown rates would probably be 22 to 24. We'll see about interceptions, but I think if he wins the job, you know, he's going to be certainly running a lot. And I think for passing, I think he'd probably be about 3,500.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com.